Welcome to Transformative Talk, Critical Conversations for Teachers. I'm Dr. Zid Haddad, a professor of instruction within the Department of Interdisciplinary Learning and Teaching at the University of Texas at San Antonio. I teach undergraduate and graduate courses in curriculum and instruction. In short, I teach teachers how to teach and save lives through the use of critical multicultural education as an approach to teaching and learning. Our podcast is produced by a different group of graduate students each week, giving them an opportunity to talk about what they're reading in my class, what they experience in the field, and how that impacts their own lives and understandings. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to our podcast from wherever you're listening. Also, you can ask us questions and engage with us further using the anchor.fm website or the anchor.fm app on your phone. You can submit questions and you can also send us voice messages. And remember, please share our podcast on all your socials so that we can build our audience. Thanks for listening, and here's today's episode.
This is Michaela.
And this is Ellie.
Your hosts for this episode of Transformative Talk. In this episode, we are going to talk about Afrofuturism and the reimagining of art curricula. So Ellie and I had the pleasure of leading a facilitation on these topics for our class. And I just think it was so fun. We did all of it virtually, but I think the excitement about Afrofuturism is that it kind of uses technology for its advantage. So it was kind of cool to be able to do it virtually. I think it actually added a different dimension to it than if we had done it like in the classroom. But I know, Ellie, like for me, when I hadn't heard of Afrofuturism before, like I didn't really understand what it was. Like, I mean, I guess I could have, I took like context clues, like, okay, like the future of African American, but I didn't really understand like the dimensions of it. It's really exciting for me, particularly as like a Black like girl, because I don't know, I think it touches on the sense of like freedom to be creative and weird and like just imaginative outside of the bounds of, I don't know, society's grip on, you know, what they expect African Americans to be, or really any other minority. So yeah, I don't know, what did you think when you kind of started learning about it?
I was in the same boat. I had not heard of the term even before, much less the concept. And I think through our preparations for the facilitation and the facilitation itself, I learned a lot about the importance of having that reimagining, or the shift of perspective. And it was, to me, it was so cool that art is a vital component for this concept, to implement that reimagining of the narrative of the black narrative, right? And I had gone to school for art education, and it was so nice to see that, you know, art has a different, it could be defined in so many ways, and it could be utilized in different ways as well. And so it was just so great to read the articles that were, you know, attached to this assignment. So we talked about, or we read about ACUF and the article about Afrofuturism, and I fell in love with the visual images that were used to demonstrate this concept. And you know, I came out walking, or I walked out of this, not physically walking, right, but since we were sitting down on our computers, but I left feeling very enlightened about what Afrofuturism is, what it looks like, and how I can see that in the media today, right? Because before, I would see images of maybe like sci-fi looking like visuals, and I had not thought much about them. You know, I thought, oh, it, like it's really cool that their style or the way that they present themselves, like Black artists, like the way that they do that is really cool. But I didn't know that there was a reason for that, you know?
Yeah, like in that article, he actually, there's this quote where he says, you know, for dark people, the very basic idea of mattering is sometimes hard to conceptualize when your country finds you disposable. And I was like, oh, like that hurts. But it's so true, like to hear that kind of expressed in that way. And I think that's why Afrofuturism is so important, because I know for me, like growing up and even now into adulthood, my eyes have been opened up to the constant narratives of Black people that I've seen, and largely they're negative. Largely they're not empowering or exciting. I mean, if there's, you know, Black people in the media, a lot of times it's stereotypical, you know, like in movies, you know, or even in the shows I grew up watching, like going back to it, you would always find like the Black girls, they were, you know, the comic relief or just like stereotypically sassy or whatever it was, had too much attitude, you know.
Exactly.
They weren't really, or you know, and it was, I really saw it happen to Black women in the media, but I think now it's so important to kind of take back that narrative and say, no, we can, here is how we see ourselves, and that's more important than, you know, what this society has been trying to, you know, feed just everybody about, you know, Black people and their culture and their existence, when it's still something that is, you know, growing and trying to find its own voice, even as it's being silenced. So yeah, I just thought that was really exciting. I think I was really touched by this, I don't know what you call it, movement, maybe. I think it's more of a movement than just,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so.
And just to, in case, you know, I just wanted to really put it into like the proper definition, at least according to ACUF, or just the term or the way that it's described, right, in actual text. So we had inputted this on our facilitation slides, but the definition, according to them, it's speculative fiction that treats African American themes and addresses African American concerns in the context of 20th century technoculture, and more generally, African American signification that appropriates images of technology and a prosthetically enhanced future. So I guess you would say that it really, I mean, it could look like however it wants, right? But generally it's more sci-fi visuals, you think?
Yeah, I think it definitely has its roots in sci-fi, because I think that is kind of the easiest, or the main mechanism through which we see our future, right? Is usually through a technological, futuristic lens. But I can definitely see the movement kind of growing into just, again, kind of retaking the narrative and painting Black people in, you know, the light that we see ourselves. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, when we talk about, let's say, like Black Panther, you know, it's a very futuristic movie, but I think there's also just an element of celebrating you know, just the Black existence in and of itself. And I think that anything that does that, like, proudly, and anything that cuts through the master narrative, I would say has the aspect of Afrofuturism in it. But I definitely think that sci-fi is kind of the main genre through which that's done. I think it's super, it's really cool.
I love it.
Yeah. I think we should maybe talk about why, you know, we chose some of the activities we did, like mm-hmm. what we did, because that was really fun too. And I think it was a pretty big success.
I know. So. I think not just us, but I believe our classmates walked away with important information about it too. So for our facilitation, we came up with two activities alongside our professor, and we chose to do the social annotation activity, but also the virtual museum. So for the social annotation, have you done that activity before, or was it something new to you?
No, it was new. I'd never I'd never heard of a social annotation before, but when Dr. Haddad was explaining it, I was like, oh wow, that's really cool to be able to essentially listen to a song together and just live react to it and kind of bounce off of each other's excitement and ideas and interests. I thought that was really cool.
I know, same here. I had not participated in activity like that, so I thought it was also very fun. And we chose to do two songs actually from Beyoncé's album Renaissance, and the two songs that we chose were Alien Superstar and what was the other one?
It was Cozy.
Yeah, Cozy, right? And so our instructions for doing this activity that we talked about with our classmates was, so we're going to take notice of the lyrics, right? And write down the thoughts, musings, questions, feelings in real time. And so also, how do these lyrics connect to Acuff's idea of Afrofuturism? So the process for that was, for me, I take time to process, right? So when I listen to something, I have to really think about what is being said and then try to connect it with my own ideas. So we played the songs, one or two times before we actually started writing down. And this was done through the Google Doc. So super easy, simple, and we kind of highlighted everyone's name, and so they each had their own space to write whatever they wanted. And it was fun because, you know, they chose their own fonts, chose their own colors.
Yeah, it was a little party.
I know, I loved it. And it actually, you know, after some time, it was so cool to see so much text, right? Like, just spilling on the page.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'd heard Alien Superstar before. Like, I'd heard snippets of it, but I actually hadn't listened to the entire song. It's definitely in a really awesome anthem for just loving yourself. Like, I don't know, even the title, Alien Superstar, celebrating your individuality, your uniqueness, but also knowing that you're a superstar, you're awesome. It's just fun. And I think that I think there was the sound of the song, it was definitely kind of I don't know what the word is. It was weird. It was purposely
strange.
Kind of
extraordinary.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. And I was really kind of struck by some of the lyrics. And just, I don't know, I really did feel empowered. Like, I liked, she says, like, she's too classy to be touched, and, you know, this is music when you speak. Like, it's such a empowering, like, self, almost like a self-love song, but without any of the, you know, just, like, unapologetically celebrating yourself.
That's awesome. I had not heard of the album at all. I had just seen the album cover of her on the horse. I thought it was great. But as far as the songs, you know, I just never had a chance to listen to them. So it was great to be able to do that with others so I can, you know, like, as a collective, get to see just different points of view, which was awesome within this song in particular, because, you know, there is just so many ways of interpreting Alien Superstar. And what was interesting to me, what I pointed out in my annotation when I heard it, was that there was a voice that was used that wasn't Beyoncé's voice, but it was, it actually turned out to be Barbara Antier, apparently, and I had looked at the lyrics, and that's the name that popped up at the very end of the song. And I was like, okay, who is this person? And why is it important that this person is in this song, right? Because as we know, Beyoncé is very intentional with everything that she puts out. So apparently this person is an American writer, producer, teacher, actress, and social visionary. So she has done lots of awesome things. And apparently she's a founder of Harlem's National Black Theater, which is super cool.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, I had to do some research there, but yeah. it's great. And I kind of wanted to point out a classmate of ours, Rachel. Like the things that she had said about this song, and she had really specified that representation matters, right? And the way that she came about that was that the part of the lyrics where it says unicorn is a uniform you put on, she stated that unicorns are magical, unique, rare, accepting, and it's something that's not easily found. It's pure, it's chosen. And so the way that she connected that was through Afro Unicorn stationery set that she has, and that she has the stickers all over her items. She said that she saw this stationery set at Walmart, and it made her feel great. And it was something that she bought because it, you know, it had like positive effects on her inner child. And when she had put that, I was like, what is Afro Unicorn? what is that? That's so strange in a great way. I want to know about it. And so she showed us images of what that looks like. And do you remember what the unicorns were visualized? You know, how is it different from the unicorns that we know generally?
Yeah, oh my gosh, this is so funny. Like, when she said Afro Unicorn, I was so confused. I was like, what in the world? But then she did show us the pictures, and it's just, you know, a unicorn, but, you know, not with the typical, you know, long flowy hair texture. No, they have, you know, curly, you know, tight curls type of mane, and you know, that's just not something that, you know, I'd ever seen. And it's so funny because that you know, we had the facilitation and she talked about it that night, and then the next day my mom showed me, she was like, I found this shirt at, I think she said she found it at Target. And it was an Afro unicorn.
Oh, like, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Like, it had the like, you know, it was dark brown, like, curly hair, and it was just so cute. And I think that you really don't realize how this, you know, again, like, this master narrative, this white-centered narrative, it's pervasive in everything, right. You know, whether it's that or whether, you know, it's, you know, whether it's the color of Band-Aids, you know, how Band-Aids are supposed to be, you know, the color of your skin, but they're, you know, just a nice little peachy color. And then when I found out that, when I found Band-Aids that were actually my skin color, I was like, wow, that's cool. You know, just,
it's the smallest things, right? And
yeah.
It's not even for everyone, you know? That's a sad part. It is.
Yeah. And you just don't realize how much, like, the extent that we are surrounded by it. You know, so when you do find things that kind of counter that narrative, you know, even if the narrative isn't necessarily negative, just allowing people to, you know, feel a part of something, you know, cool and fun, like a unicorn, you know, that's really special. So, and then, so we listened to Alien Superstar. It was really awesome. I loved our classmate, Saul. He said that he felt that this song is the anthem for powerful, desirable, and unique Black women to realize that they are the object of desire instead of a puppet of conformity. They do not need to dress a certain way. They do not need to talk a certain way. And they for sure do not need to act a certain way. And it's time for the majority to realize that Black is great. That made me feel really special. Like, aww. It made me feel, you know, kind of seen. Because it is definitely something that I have struggled with, is feeling, you know, desirable and, you know, just empowered in this society where that's not really the narrative that we've been seeing. And I think his comment really kind of leans into the next song we listened to, which was Cozy. And personally, I liked Cozy more than Alien Superstar. I think that it just really spoke to me as someone who is, you know, really kind of growing into loving herself and becoming just cozy, you know, in her own body and her own reality. I don't know. How did you feel about Cozy?
It was definitely a different, I love that it was a different theme, but it still went along the lines of changing that master narrative, right? And I'm going to point out Saul again, because he was just on fire that time with his perspective, and just, he had, what's it called? Just annotated from Maya Angelou. And for this song, he had put, "I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man the fellows stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, it's the fire in my eyes and the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist and the joy in my feet. I'm a woman phenomenally." I mean, that's just so great. I have no words.
I know, it's beautiful. I love that he quoted, you know, that quote particularly. I love that. And then he also quotes, "Still I rise. You may shoot me with your words, you may cut me with your eyes, you may kill me with your hatefulness, but still like air I'll rise." That's beautiful. And I wanted to point out another lyric in Cozy that I really loved, where she says, "Kiss my scars because I love what they made." And I just thought it was a beautiful way of, you know, taking your pain and your hurt and acknowledging that while those scars are a part of you, they do not define you. They really just add to, you know, the story that makes you even more beautiful. And, you know, those scars may be physical, they may be, you know, mental or emotional or spiritual or whatever they are, but they ultimately serve to build you instead of, you know, tear you down. And so I think that, well, Dr. Haddad says that I believe Alien Superstar comes after Cozy, but I like in the official album, I think it comes after Cozy, but I don't know. I think that Alien Superstar is, I think that makes sense, that Alien Superstar is kind of like, once you become cozy in who you are, you can become the alien superstar that you are.
That's true. That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I loved this, the social annotation. I thought that was amazing. And then, I love the, I think it was really fun that we were all kind of reading and listening to this together.
I really appreciated this time, and thank you for your perspective. It was great talking about this activity, but we'll be right back after the break to discuss more of this and our next facilitation activity.
Hey, it's Dr. Haddad. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transformative Talk. If you like what you hear, please make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on and leave us a message or send us a comment on the website. We look forward to hearing from you all, and thanks again for listening to Transformative Talk.
Welcome back to this week's Transformative Talk. This is Michaela.
And Ellie.
Your host for today. And we are continuing to talk about our awesome facilitation on Afrofuturism and reimagining our curricula. So, you know, we talked about Beyonce's Renaissance and the social annotation that we did, and how that stands in conversation with Afrofuturism. But the other activity that we did, which I thought was really cool, I had a ton of fun with it, is we wanted to create essentially a virtual museum of Afrofuturism. Mm-hmm. And so we used the lovely website Padlet, which allows you to basically create a wall of media and text. You can link YouTube videos, GIFs or GIFs, if that's your fancy, quotes, articles, and basically we were just trying to create an archive, a virtual archive of Afrofuturism, and something that we could all curate together and learn more about Afrofuturism and appreciate it for what it was, or for what it is, but also, I just think it's important because there is a lot of conversation about Afrofuturism, there also isn't. Mm-hmm. Like, there is and there isn't. So I thought it was really special to be able to contribute to something that I think is really important and will grow as the years come. But yeah, I don't know. How did you feel about kind of curating our own little museum?
I thought it was such a great idea, especially because art is the main tool for this concept, right? And you know, when we were thinking about what to do for our facilitation, I mean, I had it in mind, you know, it would be so cool for all of us to put like images from the media that we see today into something. I mean, I had thought of just doing PowerPoint slides and things like that. And I think that's kind of where the basic conception was, right? And it was actually you, Michaela, that thought, let's put it as a virtual museum instead of just putting it just there and not organizing it in a specific way, right? And so it was great, and especially because this is like a new, I would say like a space, right? Space for us to put images or just different things that we see and put it in an all-in-one space, which was really great. And so using this new space, it was really cool to see what everyone ended up putting on there. There was a lot of artists, a lot of just different visuals that I was never introduced to, and seeing that considered for them Afrofuturist was okay. This is, it's not just a one way look at what this concept is, right? So I also loved how much you enjoyed it, how much art that you put, like just lyrics that like spoke to you and that connected with the movement. I saw Missy Elliott in there, and I listen to her. I see her work, but it's so crazy, once you know what this term, this movement is about, you can connect it. And that's what we hope for those of you listening, right? That you see these examples and then you look at what you see in day-to-day life and figure and just connect those pieces together like we did. And I had listened to Janelle Monae back when I was in high school, and I had came upon her video Dirty Computer, and it was just a long, for those of you who have seen it, it's just a beautiful film production. It almost is like a movie, really, but it's just a component of all her songs. And it's really about just overcoming this totalitarian dystopian government, which targets like black characters, and it features pretty much all black characters, and it definitely has that sci-fi element, right? But it was just such like a beautiful construction and a beautiful look at this type of concept. And so like, wow, okay, I've seen this before, but now I can really put it. And I had not known that Janelle Monae is an Afrofuturist. Like, that's pretty much what she's about, like what she wants to produce and what she wants to share with like the community. And actually, she's gonna put some new music out soon. So for those of you watching, listening to this podcast, go check it out. Let's see what else she comes up with. But this was just like one of the many things that were put on this platform. And so for you, Michaela, was there like something in particular that caught your attention that our other classmates had put on there?
I loved the pieces that you chose. I love when you were talking about excuse me, when you were talking about Dirty Computer, and you quoted her, and she says, "I, Janelle Monae, chose an android because the android to me represents the other in our society. I can connect to the other because it has so many parallels to my own life. Just by being a female African American artist in today's music industry, whether you're called weird or different, all those things we do to make people uncomfortable with themselves, I've always tried to break out of those boundaries." That was perfect. Like, I'm so glad you put that there. That captures the essence of what Afrofuturism is, what it does, how it liberates you. it's not really your problem that people are feeling uncomfortable with themselves just because you are being who you are. Mm-hmm. So I love that. I also loved the Wadlington and the Nine Muses. Oh, I had never seen that. This art piece. Wow. Yeah. Where you say this powerfully disturbs our worldview of only white portraits painted in the Renaissance style. Oh, yeah, that's so beautiful. I where did you even find that? Were you just kind of, had you seen that before?
You know, that's a good question. I don't remember the name at the moment, but mm-hmm. I did follow, like on Instagram, right? I did follow mm-hmm. a page that really, like the motive for their posts was just to highlight different Black artists and different Black art. And so mm-hmm. it came across my feed and it stunned me because you're right, like there has always been European art, right? And that's, you know, all you see is just white figures and white figures being depicted as royals, as gods, as, you know, just divine. And that's not really what, you know, if you shift that to Black characters, we don't see that at all. And so that picture was my first time ever seeing Black characters be depicted as that. And it was just such a beautiful, like, characterization. If I can describe the image, for those of you just hearing and listening to this podcast, it really, you look at it, the first glance you see, it's just, there's how many people? There's 9 people involved, right? If I can count. And, you know, they're just, you know, they have their forms, the way that their body is shown and showcased. Mm-hmm. It's quite complicated in that way, but, you know, their skin, it's highlighted, and they're dressed in just like these robes, right? And they're carrying this male figure, and they have like in the background, it looks like it's set in almost seeming like Grecian in a way, with the columns in the background. And so I think I even see it isn't like a pyramid, but it has these geometric figures in the background and sculptures as well. And you know, that's something you don't see every day, and it's so sad, but really that's why these images are so important, right? Because they just shift our perspective and think like, wow, this is what could be, this is what should have been in a way. And I mean, for me, and because I was so involved with art for most of my life, I took so many art classes. And you know, the sad part about that is all I learned about were European artists growing up, and not really focusing on other Black artists or other even artists that are considered minority, right? And so this concept, this movement, this facilitation that we've even done, accelerated my interest in just researching and digging up, you know, artists like these. And I want to highlight a different artist, actually. His name is Kayndé Wiley, and he was actually the artist that did the portrait for Barack Obama. When he was, if I can recall the image, typically this artist has images of Black characters, right? But the way that they're painted, they are strong, they are empowered, they are like a force to be reckoned with. And the way that I can describe the background specifically, they're just so intricate, delicate. It has like really bright patterns usually within his work. Very colorful. Sometimes it's very like it has, they have flowers embedded within the painting. And so I just think that for this artist as well, you know, I had put in the platform, right, in my little mini gallery amongst everyone's gallery, the painting that he did, which is titled Dacia Carter, or Dacia Carter, painted in 2012. And really, what I like, my perspective on this was that this female image of power fills a long-standing gap of Black women in the history of art. And so, you know, it's just really important that this be what we should be seeing now, right? And I think what this movement is pretty much up and coming. I don't exactly know when it started, you know, just the term Afrofuturism and all that, but it definitely should be everything that we see, in my opinion, right? Like, it's just so great to see these images, and I hope that everyone can be open to seeing more of this, you know, because that's what's needed.
Yeah, and you know, as you said that, I looked it up. Actually, it seems like the term Afrofuturism was introduced in 1993.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that there were, prior to that, there were still artists and, you know, media that engaged in Afrofuturism. There just wasn't, you know, like maybe a term for it necessarily.
Mm.
But still, just to, it's still a very new thing. Is certainly gaining traction as it should. And I was just, I love what you said about how, you know, when you were talking about badminton and the Night Muses and Dacia Carter, and you're just like, you know, this is depicting, you know, what should have been. Like, that's so beautiful that you said that. It's very true. And it's something, you know, I as a Black woman have, just like a Black person, young person. So, like, I know when I was in college, I began to feel this, like, very much, just feeling displaced in this country, wondering, okay, so what, you know, what is my culture? What is that? I know I have it, but it just feels like there are so many hands that are dipping in and taking, you know, from my culture, and I don't know what's mine, because it's gotten so muddy, and, you know, feeling like there is a piece of, you know, of me missing, whether it's the lost language. I feel like, oh, I wish we had our own language, you know, to speak. But, and I believe that there was a language, I think it's called, like, Tutanese or something like that.
Oh, really?
That slaves did speak. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, but I do know that it was a language that enslaved African Americans spoke to each other, and that interests me. But I would love to learn that, just to carry that on as, you know, something inside of me that connects me to, you know, that other ancestral part of me. But I just know that I have been, it feels good to be seen and to feel like, it just feels good to have something where we can really reimagine ourselves in this world, and place ourselves as equals that are empowered and, you know, just maybe creating the justice that we should have gotten, creating it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that I do think that, at least I'm hopeful that this is something that really sparks a, an excitement and a sparks self-love and as others discover it, because I think in this country it can be very difficult to love yourself as a Black person because it's very it's a very hostile environment sometimes. So I think that's why I had so much fun with these exhibits, because I was just seeing Black people being weird and strange and silly and fun and creative and imaginative. And it wasn't always about slavery.
I know, right?
So that's what it always is. Like, if we're talking about Black people, it's, oh, let's talk about slavery or how they were beaten, like you see them in media. And, they have no problem showing you, just the horrors that happened on plantations, and it's important to see those things, but you don't realize how damaging that is when that's the only narrative you see growing up. Mm-hmm. Is your people being brutalized and being called horrible slurs and being just treated as lesser than, and then not seeing yourself represented. It's maybe you don't realize it in the moment, but that does something to somebody, like that just does. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I found this exercise, but this movement itself so healing and so exciting, was because it was a way to, love myself again, love who I am, become cozy, become an alien superstar, whatever it is, So, I think it was great. And one of the other things we did in the little virtual museum, I thought was really cool. Dr. Haddad actually thought of it, was using the virtual, AI art.
Oh, creator. Yeah, I remember that. Oh, my goodness.
That
was
so cool.
I had not touched AI art at all until then. I mean, there's different, there's some scary facets within this new, platform, right? Or system, I should say. But the art that, just was sprung from the terms that we had input into that system, came out to be so amazing. We had a couple of our classmates try it out. I had tried it out for the first time. And the images are so colorful. They embody images of women as royals, with just the wardrobe that they have on, and the setting that they're placed in, and the poses that they take on, and their facial expressions. It was pretty neat, and I actually wanted to kind of shift a little bit of our conversation towards, how can others reimagine, right, or take part in this movement. And I think a lot of what where the hesitation comes from is people thinking that art is just used as a recreational activity. It's just used to pass the time, even, or maybe it's even just geared for young children. I think a lot of the people, at least that I had been surrounded by, had thought these things. And I want to bring up an article that I read, that I came across after this facilitation happened, which talked about art being used for social justice movements, and the importance of art in those in those kinds of ways, right? And I want to bring up just different reasons why art can be a great way to be a great way to create art, and to and see those visuals happening, right? So in this article, you know, they talked about importance of social justice and why it should happen. But as far as like art is concerned, they actually brought up, and this person is, or these scholars, Bell and Desai, they have published this article in 2011, and the article, for those wondering, is Imagining Otherwise, Connecting the Arts and Social Justice to Envision and Act for Change. So they, I really took apart a couple of their reasons why art is very important in this. And so I'll go ahead and list it for you guys. So art can, for one, because they listed five reasons why art is important, right? Art helps us remember, imagine, create, and transform the practices that sustain oppression. Two, it can make visible the stories, voices, and experience of people who are rendered invisible by structures of dominance. Three, it helps us confront how we have learned to see. Four, it provides new lenses for looking at the world and ourselves in relation to it. And five, it exposes how power works in our society and world through the creation of objects, theater, music, dance, or poetry. So I thought this was so eye-opening, and I hope that others can take away something from the these reasons, right? And not just kind of gatekeep art and not gatekeep the, you know, just like the characterizations of the Black community. And so really we should be supporting artists that, you know, through whatever art medium. So this, like, it can be sculptural pieces, it can be paintings, it can be theater, it can be music, it can be poetry, it can be dance, it can be literature. So we should really keep an eye out on just the different ways that Black people, Black characters, and their stories are represented. And so did you have any thoughts, Michaela, on these, like, on these reasons? And did anything spark something within you?
Well, I just think that, you know, absolutely, that is the power of art and in all of its forms, is, again, to be able to liberate you. It's, you know, catharsis, you know, it's you get to expel something out of you, but put it into a viewable, tangible form. And you know, it's, I think that I just think it's so important. I think Afrofuturism, absolutely, it is fully entangled in social justice. And you know, you can't have Afrofuturism without social justice. There's a reason that we need to reimagine and reconceptualize, and, you know, that's part of the reason why art is so important, is because we can interpret our realities, and sometimes we may need to reconceptualize a better one. Or, you know, start the journey of well, maybe not start the journey, but start the conversation on how we make the journey to a better reality, whatever that looks like for us. I think that's why art, literature, theater, you said it, it's so powerful. I know, I don't know if you've kind of been, like, if you've heard kind of the debate, but I'm just reminded of the debate right now on The Little Mermaid.
Oh, I know. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Do not get me started with this. So crazy.
It's insane. And, you know, like, part of me is like, yes, I understand it's difficult to you know, maybe have one image of, you know, a character that you know and love, and then to see perhaps it changed can be a bit jarring, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But I'm just not sure it's worth a riot.
I know.
I'm not sure it's worth, you know, oh, she's not my Ariel, or, you know, just the racism. You know, I saw people, I saw this one video of someone painting like their child, I think, in like blackface, and then having her like watch the Little Mermaid like trailer. And I'm just like, oh, it's like, why? You know what I mean?
I definitely have no words for that. I didn't hear about that, but we really hope that, you know, everyone who's listening, and just in general, right? It can be jarring for these perspectives to be shifted, but really it's very simple in a way that it just takes an open mind, you know. And it could be difficult with just seeing everything one way for so long, but you know, there's a reason why this movement is happening, and these artists are feeling compelled, or have been, right, since 1950s and even before, been compelled to just change that narrative. And it's very upsetting. But I hope with that movie, it just, like, when that movie plays and everyone watches, they'll understand how beautiful the actress is and how she deserved to be Ariel. Her voice is just stunning. It's stunning. And it, you know, I think even her, I know for me, I think her facial features are very ethereal. You know, it's just like it should be a perfect, representation of Ariel, even though it's not her skin color. And you know, this is just one of the many examples of like the outbreak that is needed. So we had pinpointed just different media that is out, like with Black Panther, for example, with Ariel. Mm-hmm. Just real quickly, can you think of like other really popular maybe movies or songs that, you know, have been dealing with a backlash, or maybe even have gained acceptance for the master shifting?
Well, I know one director who's getting a lot of gaining a lot of traction right now is Jordan Peele with his kind of horror thriller movies.
True.
You know, he very purposely is, you know, casting Black actors to be in his movies and to be the center of his movies. So I haven't heard, I think he's widely respected, actually, mm-hmm. which is, you know, refreshing. I do think, however, that I think the reaction that we see is something that I actually talked about in another class of Dr. Haddad's, which is this concept of something called white rage. And white rage essentially is just the, you know, kind of furious resistance towards, you know, the advancement of, you know, Black people or minorities in general. When they see, you know, the Little Mermaid taking a spot that they deemed theirs, you know, they're enraged by it. Or when they see a movie that doesn't center their experience or center mm-hmm. their, you know, voices. And it's not about slavery. How dare you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, I hope that anger, you know, it's just really not, it's not worth it. And it's just another way to be racist. At the end of the day, Little Mermaid is a story for children. And as long as you're not indoctrinating your children to be racist, they don't care what color she is. Mm-hmm. They don't care what race she is. They're going to look at how beautiful she is, and they're going to hear her beautiful voice.
Exactly.
And that's going to be it. And then if you really care so much, then just watch the cartoon version.
It could be as simple as that.
Yeah, there could be multiple versions of the same story without an outrage. I think Jordan Peele is definitely one. And then I know they actually casted Yara Shahidi to be Tinkerbell. I'm not sure. I think I would like to see the creation of new stories to kind of center, Black people and other, people of color. I think creating new stories, new narratives, new characters is perhaps even a better way to keep this going instead of, we have Snow White, let's just cast, a Asian woman to play her. You know what I mean? I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing to do, but I think it may be even more powerful to give them their own stories and create something that should have been created a long time ago. What should have been, that's what I took away from this. That was great. I hope that as the the years come, that the success of Afrofuturism and the ACT and movement of reimagining art, in all of its forms, continues, and we continue to challenge this master narrative so that we can, just as a world, as all human beings, learn to just learn from each other and love each other and engage with each other better. And I really, really connect with each other. And hopefully that resistance, those that are resisting can see why it's happening, and to not take it as an attack, but take it as, right now we're just trying to correct a wrong. And maybe you don't like the way it's being corrected, but at least there's an attempt to do so. And that should be your, that should be the focus. I do think Afrofuturism is a very powerful thing, and I think that we're going to see it, continue to spread. And I just thank you so much for talking to me about this.
This was such a beautiful conversation.
Yeah, I feel really happy, and we worked really hard together. I just think we kind of bounced off of each other's ideas, and I don't know, I wouldn't have come up with a virtual museum without your base idea. So I just think you've been a lovely, lovely partner.
Thank you. You too. And it was a success with our classmates, and we really hope that you guys enjoyed our conversation, our examples, our discussion, our perspectives and thoughts about Afrofuturism and reimagining the art curricula. So I think we can conclude, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's all for this episode. Thank you so much, Ellie. Thank you all for listening. Remember, if you want to support what we do, then share, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you discover our show. But that's all for now. We'll see you in the next episode of the Transformative Talk. Bye.
Bye.